Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is Logan Gage for the CSC in Washington, D.C., and welcome to another edition of ID the Future. On the show with us today, we have Dr. Jay Richards. Welcome, Dr. Richards.
Thanks, Logan. Great to be with you.
Great. And and real quick, Jay, now your training is in analytic philosophy. Is that correct?
That's right. I got a background in philosophy and theology, and I sort of call myself a shameless generalist, but my focus has primarily been the analysis of arguments.
That's great. And you are now out at the Acton Institute out in Michigan.
That's right. I'm a senior fellow at Discovery Institute, and I'm now director of Acton Media and a research fellow at Acton in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Richards, what we wanted to talk to you about today is Paley and Hume and intelligent design. We want to know what's going on here. Often we hear the charge that intelligent design is nothing but kind of a redo of William Paley's basic argument, turn of the 19th century. First of all, what was William Paley arguing? What's this whole watch analogy?
Well, William Paley wrote this famous book called Natural Theology. It was a British intellectual, and he essentially argued for design from the features of the natural world to the existence of something like the Christian God. So it's important, first of all, to understand Paley was trying to do natural theology. His basic argument, though, is a kind of traditional design argument in which he argued from some feature of the natural world. In his case, he argued from the amazing sort of interacting parts of different things in the biological world, the mammalian eye or the heart, which is like a pump. And he compared it to this famous watch. He says if you found a watch resting on a heath in the forest and you picked it up, you noticed all these parts configured to perform a specific function, that is to tell time, not a function that any of the parts could perform by themselves, you would recognize by that configuration that they had been produced by an intelligence and hadn't just happened to come together. The same way when you see things in the biological world that seem to work together to perform a function that they wouldn't perform otherwise, you should infer design. So this, you know, obviously bears some similarities to other design arguments, but it's clear that it's an argument from an analogy in which he's basically comparing a machine or human artifact like a watch to things that we find in the biological world.
Right. Now, and when we read texts on history of philosophy or philosophy of religion, and this argument comes up quite a bit. Now, David Hume, the philosopher, who was actually before Paley, if I'm
right.
Correct, now he's often invoked as having refuted Paley. How does that work?
Well, it's strange because, as you said, it's not as if Hume was writing to respond to Paley, because Paley actually wrote after Hume's critique, so he actually wrote in light of Hume's critique. But Hume essentially criticized arguments from analogy like Paley, so in some ways it could be taken as a response to Paley. He basically said that an argument and an analogy, you're comparing two things that are otherwise dissimilar according to their, you know, a few maybe superficial similarities, and he said the argument is only as strong as the things are really similar. But he says there's a lot of significant differences between an artifact like a watch and biological organisms. The organisms, for instance, they reproduce, they after their own kind, they repair themselves, they're made of different kinds of materials and different chemistries and things like this. And
so he said, so a watch is made out of metal and
made out of metal,
sort of
we know where it comes from, we know that it tells time, it doesn't reproduce, and so it's different.
And say a cell or something isn't doing that.
Yeah, it's not doing that. And so he says the analogical argument is very, very weak. Now, it's not really a refutation, but if you look at textbooks, he's often treated as a refutation when what in fact is going on is that contemporary thinkers are reading Paley in light of Darwin. Well, Hume, of course, didn't have access to Darwin's argument, which appeared in 1859 in The Origin of Species. And so in this, we know this historically, that Hume was not taken to have refuted Paley until well after Darwin idea was widely established. In fact, even into the 20th century, undergraduates at Cambridge University were required to read Paley's Natural Theology.
Right.
But, of course, Hume and Paley did not have the Darwinian mechanism, so the choices really, kind of in some ways the jointly exhaustive choices, was either some kind of chance process, chance assemblage of parts, or design. And even Richard Dawkins admits that given that choice, design would be preferred. What Darwin did is he proposed what many took to be a plausible materialistic mechanism, that is a purposeless mechanism, natural selection and random variation, which Darwin said would mimic design so that you can get this integrated interaction of parts which together perform a function without any real design. So it's merely apparent design. And so it's kind of 1-2 punch. You've got Paley's argument being kind of intrinsically weak because it's an argument from analogy, and then Darwin's materialistic mechanism seeming to fill space that nobody knew was occupied before, namely an alternative other than either mere chance or design. And those together have been really taken to have refuted Paley.
Right,
so it's, of course, a criticism to say that contemporary design arguments are just a redo of Paley.
Sure, sure. So now my question is, even before we get to whether or not, you know, that's different, are you impressed with Hume's argument against Paley?
I'm not, actually. I mean, yeah, sure, it's true that any argument from analogy, there's going to be similarities and dissimilarities. But Paley's argument is pointing to the very things that are similar in a watch and a biological organism. It's parts that together perform a function. And if you take off the table for a minute Darwin's mechanism, I think the argument still works. It's not a deductive proof, but Paley knew that. You can think of it as an inference to the best explanation.
And what exactly is that? What's an inference to the
best explanation? Well, it's basically you look at the live alternatives. The best explanation for some kind of set of facts is going to be the thing that has the best explanatory power, that seems most probable, that can explain the phenomenon better than the others. It's not a deductive proof. It's just given cause A, B, C, and D, D seems to be the best explanation of the choices. And
so it's, it's comparative rather than kind of an absolute has to be
true right.
sort of thing.
You haven't excluded all the other possibilities as some kind of mathematical deduction. You've simply compared the alternatives and said this is the one that seems to be most reasonable or most probable. That's Paley's argument, and understood in that way, yeah, it's not a mathematical proof, but I think in light of Darwin's account, you'd still say, I think, that the argument's not a bad one. And in fact, I think Hume himself would have admitted that he hadn't refuted arguments such as Paley's. He'd just shown that they might have some kinds of weaknesses.
Sure. But now, intelligent design, is it an argument from analogy in the first place? And so would the ID critics' charge hold up that this is just all design arguments of this sort are dead because they're all arguments from analogy? Does that even hold up?
No, I don't think it does, because our forms of argument have gotten more sophisticated in the intervening years. I mean, first of all contemporary design arguments take place in light of Darwin's critique. So they're fundamentally different from Paley because we're arguing specifically against Darwinism, not against mere chance processes. Secondly, they're not merely analogical arguments. So in the case of the argument that Steve Meyer makes or that William Dembski has made, he talks about very specific properties. In Dembski's case, specified complexity. And he says specified complexity, those properties, when you find them together, reliably indicate intelligent agency. And that's true whether you're talking about an artifact or information code that's sent over a radio signal or the coding regions in a DNA molecule. You're dealing with exactly the same thing, specified complexity. So you're not dealing with a sort of somewhat vague comparison between two otherwise dissimilar things. You're dealing with a phenomena that are exactly the same in all these cases. And so if that's true, if specified complexity is a reliable indicator of intelligence, and we find it in the biological world and elsewhere in the natural world, then we've got a strong argument for design that has none of the weaknesses that are often claimed to be the case for Paley's argument.
Sure. Now, just to dwell on that one example for a moment, now, what exactly do you mean by specified complexity, and how could it be the same thing in both DNA and also in something else that we know was manufactured by humans?
Yeah, I mean, complexity, we of course have to give examples of this, but it's important to realize that when we talk about, say, the coding regions of DNA being specified and being complex, this is not a design theorist imposing that idea on the evidence. This is exactly how it's talked about. So you have complexity in the coding region in that there's improbability. You get a sequence, certain number of base pairs long, and it's going to be highly improbable compared to, you know, just any other equivalently long sequence. So you've got complexity or improbability, but you also have specification. In this case, a coding region is going to code for a specific protein when it's used inside the cell. It's like the software that a cell uses to build proteins. So it's also specified. This is exactly the same kind of thing you're dealing with in human language, in which written text, for instance, that uses the English letters, a sentence of any English sentence is going to have a fairly high complexity or improbability. But if it's a sentence as opposed opposed to just random jumbling of letters, and it's going to be specified by the rules of English grammar and syntax and usually by the basic context of a conversation that's taking place. And so you have an entity that bears the property of complexity or improbability and specificity or specification in both human language and in the coding regions of DNA. So you're dealing with the same phenomena. You're dealing with the kind of these abstract properties that we find appear in the biological world and in human literature written by people like Shakespeare.
So that makes it not an argument from analogy at all, because you're dealing with the same properties.
Exactly. And so then the only question is whether the argument itself holds up. If you could show that specified complexity is not reliable as an indicator of intelligent agency, or that some impersonal process can produce it just as well as intelligent agents, then you'd refute the argument. But you can't refute it by saying, oh, it's just merely a weak analogy.
Well, thank you for being on the show today, Dr. Richards. We appreciate your expertise.
My pleasure.
This is Logan Gage for ID the Future, signing off. Thanks for being with us.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.